Hello everyone, welcome back to the NRF1 Podcast 2016 Season Review, Part 2, The Revenge, probably. My name's Michael Bailey, sports journalist Michael Bailey. I'm going to decide to call myself that now so I can big myself up a bit. I'm joined by our full house of panel. We are still at the Rush Cutters in Thorpe, Norwich, UK. Basically by the magic of podcasting, we haven't moved since we recorded Part 1, but that's okay, it doesn't matter. So I've got Ped, Steve Rust, Kyle Cumbers, two times Beckles karting champion, of course.
Just confirmed it on Wikipedia, and it was 2008 and 2009.
It's on Wikipedia. Yeah.
That's it. We've got to post the link. We've got to post that link, or at least a screenshot. We've got to post that on the NRF1 Twitter feed. Get that on there.
That's amazing. I'm not on Wikipedia. No, we're on Wikipedia, Kyle.
Yeah. The 2008 year is missing, but I remember that. Oh, I did win it.
Oh, you won it the year it's missing?
No, I won it 2009, which is on there.
And it does say your name there.
It does say my name on there.
What happened to 2008?
I don't know.
You need to get on the people to correct it.
I will do. Yeah.
How are you not on Wikipedia? How is there not a Wikipedia page dedicated to Norwich's premier sporting journalist, Michael Bailey?
Probably because I haven't set one up.
Ah, right.
Let's start one.
You're more than welcome to start one.
I think we, in repayment for allowing us to come on your podcast and talk to you,
not my podcast,
Formula One, I think we should manage your Wikipedia page. I think that should happen.
And manage it well, we will.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I can imagine that. You've already heard the words of DT there, David on cars, a man who gets to drive a lot of cars all the time and we're all very jealous of, although the Ford sponsorship of our podcast hasn't worked out, has it, DT?
No, I don't deal with Ford at the moment.
I just like making it awkward for you.
It's nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. I have no issue.
You didn't smash the car.
No, I have no issue. We didn't smash the car. We told them that we're not to deal with them. It's not them that won't deal with us. We've shunned them. I say we. I'm a freelance, I suppose. So, but the people I write for predominantly have shunned Ford.
Serves Ford right.
And on the subject of Ford, my car is overdue. It's 3 month free checkup. I called once last week, left a voicemail. Called twice today, voicemail again, nothing. What's going on?
On the Mustang?
Yeah. I'm a bit annoyed now.
So that's for Ford need to sort that out?
Yes, they do.
Sort out Rich's Mustang, for goodness sake.
It's a free 3 month checkup. I want to make sure it's running okay.
You spent all that money on the Mustang. I've proven this week with my purchase that you can get a V8 motor for a lot less money.
Don't tell him that. It's his Mustang, his boyhood dream.
But it's not Mustang though, is it?
The answer's
no. It's not a Mustang.
But it's got a V8. But it's not as quick or as loud or as cool looking.
Awesome. Or a Mustang. Yeah. And we all love Rich's Mustang. That's not a euphemism. That is literally a sentence that is correct. So, here on the NRF1 podcast, on Acast, Future Radio, Audio Boom, iTunes, all the various places. We've already, if you've missed part one, go get it. It's on iTunes. It's on all the various places. Our Twitter handle, @TheNRF1. That's the same handle as well for the Facebook page. You'll be able to find part one of our season review where we dissected Mercedes, good and proper, and then reflected on just how good a season 2016 was. I think we did that. Anyway, we sort of got sidetracked a lot. Part two is all about the final of these for 2016. It's the NRF1 Pit Stops. So we're literally going to rattle through the entire grid and we're going to try not to make it tedious. Now, is there anything we need to say about Mercedes, given we've kind of said so much about Mercedes? Is there anything that anyone hasn't said on Mercedes that they want to get said?
I bet their car in terms of livery is going to look exactly the same next year. They're not going to change a single thing in terms of how that car is designed to look in terms of graphics. Sponsorship names maybe, but ultimately it's going to still be a really boring car to look at.
Silver turquoise.
Yeah. Breaking Mercedes news from our Mercedes correspondent, DT.
So this is Nico Rosberg's first retirement since the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, and also, or Rosberg, should I say, is the first Rosberg to win the championship since Rosberg.
Brilliant news there from DT. Great statage. I think you did have a point as well.
Yeah. So my point is going to be that I don't think that Mercedes will have the fastest car next year.
Define fastest.
in time
this year where they didn't have the fastest car in a straight line anyway.
Okay. So they were consistently top dog in terms of overall race pace, qualifying. There's a couple of occasions where people have got the better of them because of various factors, but I don't think in any of the occasions where they've been better this year, I don't think that was because they were bettered by a better car. Whereas I believe next year, I think someone is going to trump them. I think they'll still be well up there, don't get me wrong, because they still have a great engine. Obviously, they've got lots of resource. But I think we'll have a bit of a shake-up, I think.
Let's just go around the table. Who agrees for that?
I think Red Bull will be probably one of the fastest cars. I think Mercedes will be there or thereabouts, you know, sort of contenders to win some races, but I don't think they'll show the sort of dominance.
I agree with that, Red Bull, I think.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more parity in the field next year. That's what the rules are being designed to do. So if there isn't, then we really need to take a look at why we're changing them at all.
Well, I think they kind of questioned why they were changing them at all at the start of the year. And of course, Mercedes could change it all and be even more dominant than they were this year. That could happen.
Yeah, I think they'll be the quickest, but Red Bull will be nearer to them on speed.
I'm going to go completely outside and say McLaren are going to go suddenly to the top.
That is ridiculous. To be honest, everyone's laughing.
For those of you that didn't see, you listening would not have seen, the best response to that was Kyle's dismissive hand wave, as if he was dismissing some servant that works for him in the 1800s. Just completely dismissive.
You're one of his cart mechanics, well, Rich.
Well, I don't want to say too much because we've got the predictions in the third part, but you know what my predictions normally like, so don't want to brag.
You'd have just got 20 kudos points, but no actual points, so that's fine.
You're just being rich-diculous.
Oh, there you go. Nicely done, DT. Nicely done. All right, well, Red Bull then, fair to say they did much better than I was expecting this year. The engine, they turned it around, and they ended up with probably one of the best driver pairings on the grid. What a year. I mean, that was a return to form, and that's probably, when we go around the table and say who's going to be closer to them, that's probably what instigates that, isn't it? That we can see real improvement, a bit more Adrian Newey influence, a better chassis probably than most cars on the grid, all that sort of stuff.
I think she is going to more of an aerodynamic sort of formula. Then obviously Adrian Newey is one of the best, so they're going to be closer. I think it didn't do too bad for watch engine as well. We all laughing at the start of the year on how the engine was going to be, and like you say, the driver lineup is with Rosberg leaving. Is it the best now going into next year? It's better than Raikkonen and better than McLaren. So yeah, probably is the best on the grid at the moment.
Best driver lineup on the grid, Sue. What do you think? Don't ask me technical stuff. Who's your favourite driver on the grid at the moment?
Hamilton.
Oh, are you sad about how it all ended this year?
You've got to stay British, haven't you?
Oh, it's fair play. And that's my dessert. Thank you very much.
Steve comment.
Yeah. Hey.
Who's
British
Steve?
Is best. That's Steve.
Oh, okay. Hi, Steve. Great comment.
Yeah. Thanks, Sue. We're going to have a Sue Says section next year. We come regularly down the rush cutters. So, who had the better season out of Daniel Ricciardo? We now pronounce his name right. Obviously, that's a great, great step forward for the podcast. Or Max Verstappen, who missed the first four races with Red Bull, won his first one with them, and although he finished fifth in the Drivers' Championship, he wasn't too far behind.
Who had the best season out of the two of them? Ricciardo, because he got more points.
You've been reading too many bad stats, DT, I think.
No, I think Verstappen.
that's by far what we should call him from now
Dan
on.
Dan Max Rich Stappen.
Verstappen.
That was a
it must happen.
That was a genuine accident. I think Max Verstappen had the better season in terms of drives. He was the more outstanding driver, but I think they're both, I think I'd put them on a par because they've both been impressive.
I don't think it was necessarily on this occasion about who got the most points. I think it was who was more the work,
yeah, DT,
best driver of over the two over the season, and I just think he put in more solid performances and was ultimately more exciting, although it's not always the main thing.
In terms of Ferrari, who were of course third in the Constructors' Championship behind Red Bull, Sebastian Vettel came fourth, so he managed to get in between the two Red Bull drivers, although it took him until the last race to manage it. Kimi Raikkonen sixth. Kimi Raikkonen getting another year, which I didn't predict. I predicted the exact opposite at the start of this season. and actually pushing Seb far harder. And I mean, Seb seems in a bit of a hole, doesn't he, Kyle? As much as we talk about him maybe getting another drive, might have you.
In the second half of the season, Kimi outperformed him, apart from the last race when it was the old Seb he's overtaking.
It was like he needed the pressure.
Yeah. And like he had that chance of victory. Maybe that's what he needs. His last year at Red Bull, Daniel Ricciardo dominated them, and because Red Bull wasn't going to win, and maybe he just needs that motivation that he's going to win. And so maybe if Ferrari do provide a decent car, which I doubt will happen next year, then we might see the old Seb. It's just Ferrari and Vettel and Raikkonen kind of going nowhere really at the moment. And yeah, it's a big yeah. I don't think it's going to turn around next year. So how long is Seb going to be there? We don't know.
DT's eating his crumble a bit, like Ferrari deal with their Formula One cars at the moment. But I just worry that with so many changes over this summer that Ferrari might find themselves in a bit of a sticky position come next season.
I mean, I hope they take a step forward. You know, you're going to have full off season. You've got Arriva Bene. I mean, he really seems to have, long time listeners will know how I felt about Domenicali. He just looked like he didn't know what he was doing. Looked like he was there because he was someone's nephew. And that's how he probably was. I mean, he probably is someone's nephew, but it was someone's nephew who mattered.
Fact about Domenicali: if you remember the 1998 Belgium Grand Prix that Damon Hill won in the Jordan, Schumacher crashed into the back of Coulthard and was on three wheels. Schumacher stormed down the pit lane to punch Coulthard, and Domenicali was the guy who stepped in to calm him down, which is probably why he got the job in the first place, because he was ready to take a punch from Schumacher, I suspect.
Nicely done.
I still don't like him. Cool story though. But yeah, I just think on genuine question though here, and I don't have an answer, so I'd like to hear what you have to say. How much longer can Ferrari perform at such a mediocre level before they exit the sport? And then, how devastating would a Ferrari exit from Formula 1 be?
With my thoughts on Ferrari is, we shouldn't laugh at them for too much more longer. 2018, I would predict right here, right now, they will win that championship.
Okay, well, I can include that in the prediction league in 2 years' time.
Whoever's driving with them, because I read a report that didn't really get that much press, but they have been working on next year's car for quite a while, but their main focus is 2018, and the last team to do that or to look that far ahead and focus on was Mercedes.
Fair enough. The question is, who will be driving it in 2 years' time? Seb should still be there. I hope not. I'm not predicting it this time. Who knows? He's the Iceman.
You can't get rid of Kimi. You've got to keep Kimi in it. Kimi's brilliant.
That reminds me of the karting video. I reckon it's going to go up over the winter with you playing Kimi.
Yeah, that was interesting. To follow up from what Ped said, you say how much longer can they go on being mediocre? They've had long periods of mediocrity in the past, and they've carried on going. So I think Ferrari have always threatened to leave the sport if it doesn't go their way, but actually they in a way are Formula One because they've been there the longest. And I think it would be very difficult, it would be harder for them to leave the sport than I think it would be for the sport to lose them. That's my genuine opinion.
And of course, we don't know what the Formula One landscape is going to be in 2 years if we have Liberty Media's takeover agreed, and Ferrari might find that a lot of their money gets snipped.
I've got a suggestion for Liberty Media: Hot Wheels loop.
What, for Formula One cars?
Yeah, a Hot Wheels loop, like a giant Hot Wheels loop, like a loop the loop.
Didn't those sort of come to an end? Did it go round in a track and then they went round in a loop? It wasn't just like a drag where you sort of go up one end and then go back up and up again.
Like a Hot Wheels loop, it would go all the way around. I mean, my hand gestures aren't going to come across on the podcast, but yeah, it was. Kids, you all had Hot Wheels.
So a loop de loop in Formula One.
I think just from the sheer like length and how low the cars is, you'd be much better off with a barrel roll.
Barrel roll.
Easier to do. Either way, the cars have already got the downforce to do it. So,
fair point. I just want to have real time replays in the corner when they have. Live action in the corner when they show replays, because it annoys me that you can't see what's going on in the race while they're showing a replay, especially for all the replays at the start. So you want to see, just show us the live coverage at the same time.
I never heard back from him when I tweeted Formula One. I never heard a thing back.
Well, don't forget, Paul Hembree never got back to Kyle, but yet a few months later, bang, three tire combine strategy tire things. Anyway, fourth in the Constructors' Championship with Force India. Sergio Perez came home seventh in the Drivers' Championship. Nico Hülkenberg ninth. He will be replaced by Esteban Ocon for 2017 because Hülkenberg is, of course, off to Renault. So, Force India, are they getting to the point where they can't get any better? Because they finished ahead of Williams and McLaren last season, and Toro Rosso, which is an effort in themselves. What do Force India do from here?
Well, don't forget, you get more prize money for that. So with more money, if you invest it wisely, then you should be able to just keep bettering yourself. Okay, they might not ever become a Mercedes or a Ferrari, but you know, if they invest the extra prize money wisely, who knows?
If they don't become a Mercedes or a Ferrari, then they've only got Red Bull ahead of them.
True.
I'm not wishing to put you down, Steve, but it's hard, isn't it? Because that has taken them 10 years to get to this position.
But then why not? Because if you look where Red Bull were a few years ago, when they had like Coulthard driving for them, example, they were a mid-team.
They were really then.
they weren't great, and then just, you know, a few seasons later, they were suddenly front runners, and they've been up there since. And we know how quickly these things can turn around. I mean, for Force India, why not? They used to be like the team who employed like a has-been, for example, with Fisichella, and then someone who was new, like when they had Fisichella and Suttle, for example. But now they've actually had drivers who've been around a bit, and they've proven to be good racers. Both their drivers have been, oh, I think I've been on the podium. Has Hülkenberg been on the podium?
No.
Perez has, though. Hey, Hülkenberg's best finish fourth. Yeah, but they've proven they can race. They can, you know, they're quick drivers. If they can keep employing and become like an attractive team like that, they could get someone really good.
It's not about attracting the driver. It's about attracting a works company. It's about attracting someone like someone out there that's maybe been in Formula One before, or is maybe thinking about a foray into Formula One. You've got Liberty Media coming in. You've got a lot of American car manufacturers out there that love their motorsport. If there's enough investment and enough incentive and a successful enough team that's an independent that is attractive enough for it, like exactly what Mercedes did with Braun. So they came in, yeah, or Jaguar when they bought the team. Exactly. You want a works team that can come in with the money and buy a ready-made successful team that needs something to push it to that next step. Then you've got the success, then you've got the name, and then the drivers will come.
And they've been in Formula One for quite a long time now, and we still don't know what they want to force India to do.
God, DT, you've been saving them up, haven't you? What was in that crumble? Who had the better season, Kyle, Sergio Perez, Nico Hülkenberg? And we're not, obviously, yes, Sergio Perez scored more points. But I mean, I guess he had the better season, didn't he?
Other miles, yeah, he was much better than Hülkenberg. Hülkenberg actually improved after he signed his Renault deal, so it's like a bit of a boost to him. They'd be on the grid, but I kind of know that Hülkenberg's, I don't know how old he is now, probably 30. He's probably misses time, really, and I think that's why he's taken the risk to go to Renault, because he's never going to get a top drive. Funny enough, if he'd hung around at Force India, he might have ended up with the Mercedes drive following Rosberg leaving, but yeah, Perez is much better.
Former Le Mans winner, of course, Nico Hülkenberg, but he did still win it. At Williams, fifth. Of course, we've got Felipe Massa is retired, so it will be Lance Stroll who takes over from him. And Valtteri Bottas, who we don't know, might end up at Mercedes, might end up leading Williams. I think he's got a year left on his current deal. Do we want to sum up what Williams did this year?
We talk about Ferrari and how they've been off the pace and they haven't won a championship in a long time. You look at Williams, where they were early 90s, even mid-90s, how quick and competitive they were compared to now. They are miles off, and that's not where I like to see Williams, to be honest.
And I can see it getting worse. I don't know about anyone else, but I can see, a few years ago they were coming home 17th and then 18th or whatever, and I can see it. I can see that happening again, because when they were doing well, it was built around the engine, and I don't think the engine's going to have that kind of advantage, and the chassis seems shit.
Yeah, I mean, it looks bleak, so as Michael so eloquently put it. The thing is, being British, as a British Formula One fan, you look around the table and everyone, like, we want to see McLaren do well and we want to see Williams do well, and that's the way it's always been. Fortunately, you've got really passionate leadership there as a team, and I think, as you know, to echo the point, I think that was either Rich or DT just made, I can't remember, about, you know, it might have been you actually, they were coming 17th or 18th, you know, but they're still here. If they've not retired by now and not pulled out of the sport by now, and especially with, you know, Claire Williams being of an age where she is, you know, still young enough to take that team forward with energy, I'd be surprised if we see them leave the sport. They'd have to be mightily struggling for that to happen.
And if, you know, who knows? It suddenly, it's the wonderful thing about Formula One is that there is an element of serendipity about it in the fact that, you know, it's like making a cake. You stick all the ingredients in, mix it all up, put it in the oven, and sometimes that cake will come out really nice and fluffy, sometimes it won't. But you can do the exact same thing the next time and get a different result because there's just so many variables. That's the same with Formula One.
Ed, are you trying to say that Mary Berry should run a Formula One team?
Who's, and would it be Williams? Are you going to say who's Mary Berry?
No, just from your face, I'm not going to say that.
You
no,
can, you can do.
Of course she should. Of course she sounds like a good old girl. Who is she?
I would probably say you don't strike me as someone who'd watch The Great British Bake Off.
No, but I know what that is.
So Mary Berry's on there.
Oh, okay. What does she do?
She cooks and cakes. She's done it for years.
I thought it was an elimination style.
How could no, she? She's the judge.
Oh, right. Okay, cool. No, okay. No, then no. No, she shouldn't. No, she shouldn't be running a Formula One team. She definitely doesn't have the credentials. Probably all the funding. I mean, DT, what a ridiculous question.
She can't make a decent cake.
But Delia sort of runs a football team, so maybe...
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah,
She runs the restaurant attached to the football team's ground, I know that.
Rocky ground.
Maybe she'll be in charge of catering for next year.
Stop blurring the lines. McLaren, sixth in the Constructors' Championship. Fernando Alonso coming home 10th. Obviously, Jenson Button is no more. He has ceased to be a driver. In Formula 1, he has retired. Stoffel Vandoorne, who finished 20th in this year's driver standings, which is not bad given a lot of other drivers had a lot more races. He will be taking over, of course, in 2017. And you're very hopeful that they're going to do something completely out of the ordinary. We don't know who's going to be in charge there yet, do we? We don't know what this Honda engine is going to be like in 2017. Ron Dennis thought it was going to be great next year, and he's not going to be there to see it, Kyle.
It's been a bit of a nothing season. We're just waiting to see if they ever get towards the front. I don't know if they will for next year or the year after, possibly. Honda have still got a long way to go. And even they were saying, but even like tracks, we thought, oh, it's not such a big engine track. We thought, oh, McLaren might do something here this weekend. And they were towards the back end of the top 10. So the chassis isn't that great. And even they were saying, oh, we're the third quickest chassis. Well, McLaren shouldn't be the third quickest chassis. They should be the quickest chassis. They shouldn't be targeting third. But they got the budget. They should have the people. Ron's gone. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for them.
Yeah,
I just don't know. Just don't know with McLaren. It's a bit, yeah.
I've been quite critical, really, of McLaren since Hamilton left, really. I'd started to sort of feel that way for many years, even whilst he was still there. But, I mean, they still insist on this ridiculous agreement that every year with a new car they start afresh, they just completely scrap it, you know, whereas so many teams like Mercedes, like Red Bull have taken what has been a good successful car and then evolved it, whereas they've just chucked it in a bin and started again, and it's just been a complete useless failure. And they still insist on that, and quite a few of their top guys have disappeared over the years now to either Mercedes, Ferrari or rival teams as well. And they haven't actually got that much of a bigger budget anymore. You know, that I think they're only about the third or fourth biggest spending team. You know, that was, I think that at one stage that they were a little bit more than Ferrari in some of their heyday, but not anymore. I don't know. I don't really know what the future holds for that team, really. It's a bit of a strange one, really.
I feel like it's a big year coming up, most definitely. If we go down the remaining five teams then, Toro Rosso came home in seventh, Carlos Sainz showed some good signs, Daniel Kvyat did well to see the season out, I think, to be honest, so he got on his bike, but he will probably come back, so we'll see if he ends up on a bike or not in 2017, but they struggled rather a bit, didn't they, Toro Rosso?
I feel like they took a step back this year. I mean, Toro Rosso, the one thing that you could always rely on for Toro Rosso was those tracks like your Monzas, they were rockets in straight lines, they always were, and they had young, exciting drivers. And they were always, you know, you'd expect them to be dueling around with Williams and things like that. But
even at the start of the season, they were pushing Red Bull quite hard. It just sort of, performance fell off a cliff, really. They just didn't add to it.
It was last year's engine, I think, that really cost them, which was old, and obviously there was no work done on it to improve it. I think that's what cost them more than anything. But, I mean, still, they finished ahead of a couple of decent teams who have been further forward in the points before, so...
Well, and one new team in terms of Haas, Kyle. We'll come to you to talk about Haas, if we may. Romain Grosjean will be in the seat next year. He came 13th in the Drivers' Championship. Haas were 8th in the Constructors. Esteban Gutierrez didn't score a point, and he's not going to be there because Kevin Magnussen will, of course, be alongside. Roman next season. So in terms of a first full season with their Ferrari car, it was quite good, wasn't it?
With the Haas car, they I mean, to finish eighth in the championship, first year, completely new team, it was a brilliant year. I mean,
will it be tougher, do you think, next year for them?
Possibly, because you look at it, they got a lot of their points at the start of the year. But it's good strategy and taking advantage of that. But yeah, I think they'll learn a lot from this year. I mean, they had a problem with their brakes this year, and hopefully that will be solved for next year. They went about it the right way, and at least they were, compared to, say, Sauber or whatever, at least they were, at times, they were racing at the front and also pushing their top 10. The pace was there, but maybe the, like, race management and the whole team will need to learn a bit, and I'll take that from this year and, yeah, and do well next year, hopefully.
Renault, Kevin Magnussen is of course off to Haas, but he had a good return to Formula 1. Jolyon Palmer keeps his seat. Steve, happy about that?
Yeah, good.
I mean, they said it's a long-term project they're working on, which it clearly is, given they finished ninth in the Constructors' Championship, so they were nowhere really near it. Sauber deserve about as much mention as we're going to give them.
Renault, I think, do deserve some special mention for their livery, though, this year. I think they... I personally think they had the best livery, and that's important in Formula 1, because Formula 1 is a very visual sport, and I think a lot of teams, especially lately, have really been phoning it in McLaren with their liveries, and it's nice to see them doing something different. I also like what Red Bull did with their matte satin paint finish thing. You know, that's, you know, we always look back at like the 7-Up Jordans and stuff and say that's an amazing car, and you know, when Williams did the Martini livery and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, good on them.
So we might remember the Renault car for its livery in 10 years time more than we remember the Renault car for its season at the end of the season.
Although their black testing livery was cool as well, and I don't know whether or not I prefer the yellow or the black.
Yeah, I prefer the black one, definitely.
I want to see a car decked out in chromed up, but like a chrome effect.
Oh, we had it with McLaren, didn't we?
Proper burnished, proper reflective, I think.
Proper chrome, literally built of chrome.
Has anyone seen running around Norwich at the moment? There is a, I think it's an Audi A3 or an Audi S3 in blue chrome.
Yes, I have seen that. Yes.
Ed's seen it, I haven't.
Yeah, maybe we'll have blue chrome. Yeah, Sauber could be blue chrome.
Well, that would improve from 2016, most definitely. And we'll see who they name, because as you mentioned to me earlier, Kyle, Felipe Nasr is not yet confirmed to race alongside Marcus Ericsson next season, so we will see.
I think, yeah, like I said, Wehrlein was the favourite for the seat, obviously before the news of Rosberg. Yeah, but I suppose they'll probably be going for the driver with the most money, probably, the way the situation they're in. But.
And the same with Manor, who we don't know who's got either seat there, do we yet? And I guess given they've now lost $11 million, they might be in a little bit of trouble.
I think Nasr will end up there, to be honest. I think he'll go there because he's got funding from Brazil, and there was a lot of talk that Bernie's desperate to have a Brazilian driver on the grid, because I read somewhere today that the Brazilian TV audience is the biggest in the world for Formula 1, so if there's no Brazilian driver, obviously that's going to take a hit, and so is Bernie's pocket.
So what if there's no Brazilian Grand Prix, you'd imagine, as well, but we will come on to that in part three. So we'll see if we still have 11 teams on the grid last year, but I don't know if it really benefits from having 11 teams on the grid in 2016, but it was what it was, I suppose. Right, just a quick flag up. Of course, this is the NRF1 podcast with Audio Boom and Acast and Future Radio. We're on iTunes too. Don't forget, you can keep in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. The handle is @TheNRF1. You can email us nrf1podcast@gmail.com as well, and the website nrf1.uk for all our blogs, betting tips, what have you, which we will do over the course of the coming season, we promise. I might even write a blog before Christmas. That's like a little goal of mine. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline, along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like, and if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? Anyway, we do our Of the Weekend Awards every week, race week, every Grand Prix week, but of course it's now the end of the season, so let's do our Of the Seasons.
Right, subbing in for Michael Bailey, who is eating his dessert, as the rest of us have all managed to eat. As he says, time to do the Of the Seasons. So first off, going to go around the table and ask for the Rodolfo Gonzalo Driver of the Season.
Gonzalez,
edit that, Michael. Rodolfo Gonzalez Driver of the Season. And I'm going to come to you first, Steve.
Max Verstappen. Ooh. Simple as.
Kyle, for yourself.
I'm going to go for Sergio Perez. A little bit different. Finished seventh behind the Mercedes, and Red Bull and Ferrari drivers, so sort of like best of the rest of the big teams. He's getting better and better. I'm a big fan. And yeah.
And of course, staying put for next season. So, yeah, absolutely. DT?
Yeah, I think it's almost impossible to look past old Max, or young Max, shall I say. He did an amazing job this year of making Formula One exciting, and not many other people on the grid did that. So he made it worth watching. Other than that, could be considered potentially a bit of a dull season. But yeah, Max, epic.
So far, no one gone for the man that we all said couldn't win a world championship, who then did win a world championship against arguably the best driver in the world. So Michael, finish that last mouthful. Your driver of the season?
See, there's no way you can give it to Nico, because he was in a situation, he did really well in so many different situations, but he didn't transcend what he was in. Max did. Max moved teams. Max drove in a new car for the first time in a Grand Prix and won it, regardless of the fact that the two Mercedes cars took each other off. Even when Max Verstappen didn't win a race, you ended up talking about what he was doing. A lot of that was because at times he was winning driver of the day when he didn't do anything, because he's got loads of Dutch fans who like voting on Twitter. But the one we all end up talking about in terms of performances on the track was Max Verstappen, so it has to be him. I'm not even sure Nico Rosberg was the best driver of the year at Mercedes, so in all honesty, but there wasn't much between those two. But I think what Max did everywhere else had to be Max.
Okay, DT's got something to add.
I don't want to jump ahead of you, Ben, sorry, but now all I was saying is also as well, you said about Rosberg, I don't think you could give it to Rosberg, seeing as he won fewer races than Hamilton. He did enough to win the world championship, but he did enough to win the world championship, didn't he?
Oh, but consistent finishing is what makes a driver great, isn't it?
No.
So what does?
Epic skills.
Have you given yours?
Well, it's Max. I mean, Max is for the no. I completely agree. He's made it exciting. He's done fantastic, amazing things in a car that he's not very familiar with. But I do want to give a special mention to Kimi Raikkonen, because I think halfway through the season I was saying Kimi's not the answer. Kimi needs to go. Ferrari are wasting their time. But actually, consistently, he was there or thereabouts, and there was just, you know, the odd turn of luck. I mean, I know Vettel's last drive in the last race of the season was phenomenal, but I just think I'll give a special mention to Kimi. Obviously, I've also fallen in love with his homeland after my recent trip to Finland. Rich, driver of the season?
This is a really outside one, really strange, but there's a reason. I'm going to say Danny Kvyat. simply because
that's terrible.
Not necessarily for how good he's been on the track, but for someone who's 21 to be dropped by the Red Bull team, pushed back into Toro Rosso, kind of the difficulties he's had to go through to still come back and be able to, he's pulled off a few good drives, he's scored points for Toro Rosso, and I think that must have been difficult for someone of his age and still how young he is and the potential he's got to still be there and have a drive for next season rather than just completely drop out entirely.
There's an argument there, certainly in terms of the fact that it didn't destroy him, which I think it could have done to other people, but keep going. Team next, Ped.
Oh crikey, team of the season. Do you know what, I'm going to go controversial. I'm going to give it to Haas for coming in as a brand new...
Kyle's clapping.
Kyle's approved. 2008-2009 Beckles Karting Champion Kyle Cumbers approves this message. Proving that the best way, obviously, to debut in Formula 1 is to effectively buy the blueprint of a car off of someone else and not be terrible. And you know, they weren't terrible. We were talking about them extremely positively. But they conduct themselves well, they do business in a good way, and hopefully we'll see more things from them. So in terms of a brand new team coming in and not absolutely being shit, hats off to Haas.
Let's rattle through them, shall we? Team?
Red Bull.
I think I would probably say Red Bull, I think, but it's hard, a hard one.
Force India. Force India 11, but yeah.
Mercedes.
I would agree with either Force India or Red Bull.
Yeah, Force India is a good shout. I don't know what the answer is to that one, but we never know the answer, do we?
So next one, gents, is race of the year. I'm going to start this one, actually, because I've got mine already. I've prepped. I'm going to say new kid on the block, Baku. Just for that drive through the old town was just something real special, real unique, real special. And it did well.
Brazil, for me. I think it's going to be a fairly obvious answer. I think everyone's going to say Brazil, but it was a race to remember.
I wouldn't.
I'm going to say Silverstone. Keep it British, but also not just because that. But it was a good race. It was always nice to see a British driver win his home Grand Prix, and also just for the banner that had Nico caution, you know, turn ahead and all that. Just just the bit of abuse that we could dish out.
No one said the right answer yet.
Yeah, Monaco. It was a wet race, yeah, and that was the race where I think Rosberg had to give way to Hamilton because he was just so slow. And then went on to win it and nicked it from Red Bull, which I think was Ricciardo who was on to get that and was rather peeved.
And then went on to win the world champion. That's like the world champion was the one who pulled over
and was the wrong answer because Justin Bieber was turned up and stood hanging out with Hamilton. Yeah, ruined it.
Bieber ruined it.
Well, it is the wrong answer. You're right, Kyle.
Bieber broke Monaco.
Austria. The last lap crash between the leaders.
How is it not Spain? How is it not where the Mercedes knock each other out and Max goes and wins that race for the first time?
Because there was one exciting bit probably the whole race, which was the Mercedes crashing, and then it was pretty straight sailing, just a parade for most of the rest of it.
Well, you thought that Max would just win that race?
I know everything, as you know from my predictions. So,
my favourite award, the Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. Actually now of the season. Michael, you're first, go.
Thanks. That's not fair. I don't like this side of it. I think you could probably... All right, Rich. You could probably make a case for Daniel Kvyat being driver of the season, but you could probably make a case for him being pastor of the season as well. Probably the FIA for so many rule changes that were complete from the... qualifying to the track limits to then the reneging on both of those rules to the stewarding where no one seemed to quite know whether someone was going to get a penalty for something or whether they fancy giving a penalty for that. Just an absolute mishmash. Makes it impossible.
Radio rules as well. Changed halfway through the season.
Help if you've got an issue and all that, yeah.
I mean, still Mercedes for the last race as well. I thought that was a disgrace. Really did. But yeah, who else?
I'm going to say Esteban Gutierrez. He's a really nice guy and all that. But he was kind of stupid enough to come out 3-4 races before the end of the season and say, I've definitely got a drive for next year. 2 weeks later, Haas say, yeah, we're signing Magnussen for next year. And then he's throwing his gloves around the garage and having arguments with the boss. So... I mean, he might end up at Manor, who knows, but...
I say Gutierrez, because when your teammate scores 29 points, you don't score any. That's a pretty awful season, isn't it? So, yeah, Gutierrez.
I'd go with Bottas. I thought he had a terrible season, to be fair. For somebody who had a lot of promise, Oh, yeah, a terrible season.
I don't know. The closest parallel that I can draw between Maldonado and something that happened in the 2016 season, I think probably Sauber. They had a shocking season. They might as well have not turned up. And both their drivers were a bit Maldonado-ish as well. They crashed into each other, didn't they? And they did a fair bit of crashing, I think, between the two of them. So yeah, so that's my goat Maldonado of the year.
I'm going to give my goat to Rio Haryanto. How do you get dropped from the worst team on the grid?
I can tell you why. Because he was too busy organising the Rio Olympics.
He's gone rogue.
Touché.
So in that vein, of which that is not one, highlights of the seasons. Gent, Kyle, I'm coming to you first.
I have one of the crashes between Mercedes drivers. I'm sort of repeating myself a bit, but yeah, the Spain one, first lap, was just, yeah, that's, we'll look back on that in 20 years' time. That was just a crazy incident. And yeah, the Mercedes crashes between each other.
I'm going to say, similar on the crash line, but Fernando Alonso in Australia at the start of the year. Of course, he was flipping upside down and all over the place, and then he got out and was like, oh, it was pretty much okay. You know, it's astonishing to see. Everyone's, sounds dodgy, but everyone likes to see a crash in Formula One. But when you see it that big and that huge and shocking, and you think it's going to be death, and then he gets out of the car and is okay, it's wow. And that's the pure highlight, just for the safety that these cars have.
I think it's the safety that makes the crashes entertaining. So we're in a very privileged position, really, isn't it?
So I kind of have two highlights. One is a genuine highlight, one's more of a sort of comedy highlight. But the genuine highlight was Max Verstappen in Brazil taking what seemed to be the most ridiculous lines around corners, but then managing to drive around people as if they were going backwards. That was just, it was fascinating to watch. And the thing is, he did it time and time again, but no one followed him. No one tried to do what he was doing, at least not that I noticed anyway. That's probably my highlight of the year. But also I quite enjoyed Alonso repeating his deck chair meme from the year before. After he broke down, I thought it was quite funny.
Probably just generally Max Verstappen's overtakes throughout the season, really. I think that's about the only, well, that and the checkered flag at the end of the season, perhaps. But
I think I was at Goodison Park covering the football when I was at a football away from Norwich when the Spanish Grand Prix was going on, and just that happening in the background was just incredible. I actually think, although it wasn't my favourite race, and it's interesting how it's such a good, I think it was a great season because we all picked different races that were our favourite races, but what happened in Brazil was just so captivating to watch, and the end as well in Abu Dhabi. I just thought that was a brilliant way to end a season. It was exactly what we all wanted to see, and that drama is why you, and it's so nice because you get so excited before a Formula One season because you don't know what it's going to be like, and then when it starts getting into a pattern, it's, you know, the dynamic changes. You start talking about other things because you know who are the top dogs. So to have it come back around to a really exciting climax is just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, mine's Spain and Max's drive and Max's win. I mean, I think it's just because of just how young he is, carries himself with a level of maturity. He doesn't have that petulance when he gets out of the car. You know, even if he's done something wrong, he doesn't have that. I mean, I think Vettel's more petulant in the car than Verstappen is. But yeah, just his drive in Spain was fantastic.
I've just realised I'm going to take back what I said about Sauber, about them being the goat of the season, because I just realised who's been more ridiculous this year, and that is both, I forget his name now, but the presenter from BBC Radio London who interviewed you live.
Eddie Nesta.
And the media and the general public as well, after what Lewis Hamilton did in the last race of the season, because Martin Brundle went around and asked everyone and all the drivers on the grid, and they were like, well, we'd do exactly the same, so what's the big deal? But everyone else seems to have taken umbrage with it when it was a perfectly legitimate way to race. So that
all the media and the fans, so all of the, a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are the goats of the season.
The ones who didn't get it. The ones who didn't get it.
Yeah, the ones who disagreed with what Hamilton did. You're all goats.
You're all pasta to us. And you can listen to that interview on our channels at the NRF1 on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks to the BBC, to BBC London for the permission. Enjoy that. Okay, well, that is the end of an epic part two. We've just got one more part of our 2016 season review. So we'll be back with that, where we reveal the winner of the Prediction League. Steve's looking very pensive. You know all the ways to get a hold of us. Thanks to the guys. We'll be back momentarily with the magic of podcasts to bring you part three. And don't forget, if you missed part one or any of this, you can find it all on iTunes feed and on Audioboom. Until then, goodbye.